Welcome everybody to the second session of today's talks. It's my great pleasure to welcome Luca Dell'Antonia, who is from Waterloo University, so he's kind of local, and he will talk about a measurement-based variation of quantum eigensolve. Please go ahead, Luca.
Thank you very much, Stefan, and thanks first the organizer for letting me present this result that I'm quite excited about. And then also everybody to join, particularly the Europeans, because I guess that at 7 in the evening, people have usually more interesting stuff to do instead of listening to a talk. But nevertheless, whoever is here, welcome again. And then, as Stefan just said, I will speak about a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver, which is a work done particularly by this master student in our group, Ryan Ferguson, along with Abdul Rahim, Carl, Wolfgang, and Christine. And the work has been posted on the archive a few weeks ago, and you can find it in the link down there. So the outline of the talk is the following. So I will first give an introduction to give the tools that we have been used throughout our work. Then I will explain very briefly, actually, what is a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver that is from now on called MBVQE. And then I will apply it to two different examples, the first one being the Schwinger model, and the second one being the perturbatory code, to explain and to highlight some of the advantages that this measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver has. Because it's not always advantageous, but in some cases it is, and I'm going to see when and why it is like that. At the end, I will present some summary and conclusions. So, introduction first. As you can see from the colors here, so the blue and the green colors, our work is based on two different pieces of the puzzle. The first one being a measurement-based quantum computer, and so measurement-based quantum computing, which is an alternative of circuit-based quantum computing, and the other one being a variational quantum eigensolver that, thanks to Tobias Hartung, I do not have to introduce too much. I will just say a little bit what it is. First, I will tell you a little bit about the measurement-based quantum computer, which can be for which a very, very good review that we have called the Bible during this project is the one by Rausendorf, Brown, and Briegel in Physical Review A or in Archive for a more recent version. So what is a measurement-based quantum computer? So in general, if you want to have some computation on a quantum computer, if you have a quantum computer, there are two different ways, at least usually there are two different ways to perform this computation. And one way is the one given by a circuit. So this is, I am assuming that everybody is familiar with, and here in this example, we have a circuit with an initial state, in this case 0, 0, 0, and then there are some gates. It's not important what these gates are, forget about theta 1, theta 2, theta 3, and theta n, they are just some gates that you perform on the initial state such that the state is modified. Another way that is maybe a little less common, but nevertheless successful and interesting is the so-called measurement-based quantum computing, where instead of preparing an initial state and applying gates onto it, you prepare a very big entangled state first, and then you perform the computation by measuring out some of the qubits, some of the auxiliary qubits. Now, I will not say pretty much anything about the circuit phase, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about the measurement base to keep some common framework. And in order to give this common framework, I will just explain a super simple example where we want to do this circuit in a measurement-based fashion. So this circuit is a circuit in which we start from a state plus, and then we apply just a phase gate such that the outcome of this circuit is zero plus some phase, the state one, and the gate here is just a rotation about this, the z axis as explained here. So how do we do this circuit in the measurement based fashion? So we first prepare this entangled state, which is made by five qubits. Each of them is prepared in a plus state. So we have qubit 1, qubit 2, qubit 3, qubit 4, qubit 5, each prepared in a plus state. And then we apply CZ entangling gates between them. So as you can see, the first qubit corresponds to the input of our quantum circuit. And then qubit 5 is the output of the circuit. And then if we measure qubits 1, 2, 3, and 4 following this pattern, in the sense that qubit 1 is measured in the x basis, meaning we project onto one of the two eigenbases of the x operator, qubit 2 as well. Qubit 3 is measured in this rotated basis, where essentially we apply this a phase to the x basis, and qubit 4 again in the x basis, what we end up with is that qubit, the output qubit, qubit number 5, is the same as the output of the circuit. And so this state with this measurement pattern corresponds to the circuit, which is represented here upright. Just to say a little bit more, I will represent a commonly known way to perform a single qubit, a generic single qubit unitary to any state. So now the first qubit, instead of being in the state plus, is in the state zero. And then by following this procedure, we will perform a generic single qubit unitary. So the first qubit is again measured in the x basis, and here in the bottom I am representing the current state. This is a little is not very formal, because technically speaking, at each step, every time we measure a qubit, we are left with several qubit states. So this current state is not formally exact, but it's for giving you an idea of what is happening step after step, in particular, which is the effect of the measurement on each qubit after this is done. So after measuring the first qubit, nothing happened. The first qubit, you have to think, is just something for letting the computation start. The second qubit, and by the way, here on the right, there is the block sphere where it is represented the state, and the state is represented by this black circle, which now is cut in half because my graphic ability are pretty lame, I have to say. But anyway, so we start with the zero state, and then we measure qubit number 2, and we perform a rotation around the x axis of an angle phi 1. Then we measure the qubit 3 in a rotated basis with angle phi 2. And then we perform a rotation around the z-axis of angle phi 2. And then the fourth qubit, we perform a rotation. We measure it in the rotator. Let me just go through very fast again. We prepare this graph state where each qubit 1, 2, 3, 4 is prepared in plus. We perform CZ between them. And then we measure the first one in x, the second, third, and fourth in this rotated basis, which are defined here. And following this pattern, we start with the zero state, we rotate around the x-axis, the z-axis, and the x-axis again, such that the final state, the final qubit, is such that you can apply a generic unitary operation on the initial state. And now, so I have explained you how to apply arbitrary rotations. There is another pattern, another graph state, and another pattern where I call graph state this sort of states, where essentially each circle is a qubit. and then each connection is a CZ gate. And then there is another pattern for which you can make a CNOT gate. And then with arbitrary rotations and the CNOT gate, you can perform, you have a universal set of gates such that you can make a quantum computer. There are several other gates for which I don't have time to explain, but essentially the literature is quite rich. Now, suppose that you want to do something more complicated. So suppose now that you want to do to perform this circuit on an initial state. So we want to do again a phi gate on the first qubit, a Hadamard on the second, a CNOT, and a Hadamard on the first. Well, so the graph state corresponding to this qubit is this one, but just putting the graph state is probably not very helpful to you. So let me just explain a little better how does it work, the measurement-based quantum computing in this case. So here we have on the left, the two qubits which are in dark blue are the input qubits, so the state that you have in the first and second physical qubit. And then the patterns, so the orange patterns is the same one that we have already seen a little ago for the phi gate. And then the Hadamard is again a single qubit unitary, so you can understand that, or at least you can think that you also need five qubits, which are highlighted in yellow. The CNOT is a little more complicated, but is a well-known result for measurement-based quantum computing, and you have this pattern here, which is highlighted in violet, and then the Hadamard again is this five qubit at the end, while all other qubits are, if you want to call them, sacrificial qubits, and are not important for the computation. And then the output of a gate is the same as the input of the next gate. Now, if you noticed, and the yellow circle are the output qubit. If you notice here, I use different colors. So the dark blue for the input, the white for the output. And then there are two other colors, which are light blue and orange. And the orange one is the one which is measured in a rotated basis, while the light blue one are measured either in the X or the Y or the Z basis. So for measurement-based quantum computing, there is a very, very nice theorem which states something important. And this important thing is that whenever you do not have a qubit which is measured in a rotated basis. So whenever you have a qubit, in this case, whenever you have a blue or a light blue qubit, the computation that corresponds to this qubit, the effect on the state that corresponds to measuring out this qubit, can be simulated efficiently and classically. So what does it mean? This means that you can classically take this state, feed it into a classical computer, and find out which is the resulting state. In this case, is this one, which does the exact same computation as the previous one, but now without all the light blue and blue qubit. And this is particularly helpful because this allows you in practice to remove all the Clifford component from your circuit. So no matter how big the Clifford component is on your circuit, and no matter how big in terms of qubits your circuit is, this theorem allows you to do all the Clifford part, all the Clifford gates before anything, efficiently and classically. And this is going to be one of the reasons for which the measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver might be helpful in the future. Now, just to finish telling you about measurement-based quantum computing, I just wanted to say that the literature is quite rich, and there are several results, most of them focusing in creating this highly entangled graph state. Because this is indeed the most complex, the most difficult thing to do. Because once you are able to create this graph state, you just need to measure the qubits in order to perform some computation. I mean, just measuring the qubits, it might be challenging, but in principle is supposedly very simple. And now I am, after a measurement-based quantum computer, I'm going to tell you a little bit about variational quantum eigensolver. So it's going to be extremely short, and the review for the topic is given by this by this well review. So now suppose that you want to, changing a little topic, suppose that you want to find the ground state of a target Hamiltonian. So what do you do? And again, I thank Tobias Hartung for introducing this. What you do, you can do this feedback loop where essentially you prepare an initial state which is fed into a quantum computer, in this case represented by this atom. This quantum computer modifies this state, applying a circuit. So now I am speaking about circuit because in the literature, variational quantum eigensolvers are based on circuits. In these circuits, there are parametric gates. These parametric gates depend on some parameter theta. And then the circuit spits out an output state, which obviously depends on these parameters theta. Finally, the last ingredients of the quantum platform is to measure these states and provide a cost function, which is just in this case the energy of the system with respect to the state psi out. And this cost function is fed again back into the classical optimizer, which updates that the variable theta. And then this feedback loop repeats until you minimize the cost function, and then hopefully you find the ground state and the ground energy. And just to say that this is something particularly exciting, at least in the last years, I just wanted to mention that there are several works and the variational quantum eigensolvers have been used many times in the last years. Now, it's now time to introduce, to actually define what a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver is. And in order to do that, I mean, I just want to say that it's actually extremely simple. So forget about the classical part and just focus on the quantum part. As I mentioned you very briefly before, so far the quantum part was based on a circuit. And now the only idea, which is pretty trivial if you think about it, is what if instead of the circuit, you put a measurement-based computer? And this idea, which is incredibly simple, turned out to have some interesting applications. So let me just formally tell you, or at least define a little better, how do we do that. So in this case, we start again from an ansatz state, because the same as for the standard BQE, we start from an ansatz state. Hopefully this ansatz state, is a graph state, or we would like to apply measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver to cases in which the ansatz state is a graph state, or is helpful to have it as a graph state. And then what we do, we decorate the edges, or we decorate this ansatz state with auxiliary qubits, and to create this custom state. So this custom state is the ansatz state, but after adding auxiliary qubit, which are now in orange. And these auxiliary qubits are then measured, and their measurement changes the state of the output qubits, which are the white qubits, and then allow you to explore a variational class of states. Now, these orange qubits, which are the auxiliary qubits, are measured in rotated bases, R theta, and these theta are the variational parameters that the classical optimizer now is optimizing over. So as you can see, it's very simple, but now we can try to understand why and when is this helpful to us. So first, we have considered the Schwinger model. The Schwinger model, just few words to introducing this model, which I don't think is particularly important to this audience, but nevertheless, let me say a couple of words. The Schwinger model is a one-dimensional model of quantum electrodynamics, where we have vertices and edges of a one-dimensional lattice. And then in the vertices, we can have fermions, in this case, positron E plus or electron E minus. The positron are on odd sides and the electrons in even sides. And then in between these vertices, in between these particles, in between these fermions, we have an electric field here, L1, L2, L3, L4. Since it is in one dimension, the electric field is a redundant degree of freedom. And then you can cast this, the Schwinger model on qubit operators where you effectively remove the electric field, because as you can see, if the electric field here is minus one, if there is no particle, so if there is vacuum, it cannot change. If we put another positron, it has to go to minus two. And here I know it is a little confusing that a positron reduces the field instead of increasing, but nevertheless, it's just a notation. And then if there is an electron, it has to increase to minus one. So as you can see, the electric field is a redundant degree of freedom. You can remove it. And after its removal, you get with a Hamiltonian, which is very complicated, because the removal of the electric field introduces nasty interaction, many bad interaction, long-range interactions, which makes this problem more difficult. So at the expense of removing the electric field is to have this nasty Hamiltonian. So how do we find the ground state of this nasty Hamiltonian? Well, we can use a measurement-based or a generic variational quantum eigensolver, and this has been done already quite a few times. So it's not novel here. Let me first here tell you a little bit about the circuit. I know that I'm speaking about variational quantum eigensolver, but in this, the Schwinger model is used to tell you, to demonstrate that any variational quantum eigensolver, which is based on the circuit model, can be translated very, very simply to a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver. So a variational quantum eigensolver, which is based on a circuit, needs a circuit, and this circuit is structured in so-called layers, which are these gray rectangles. So we start from an initial state, we put one layer, two layers, and so on and so forth. And then we need to define a layer. And then in this case, our layer is made by a first set of rotation around the z-axis, followed by rotations around the x-axis, and then Clifford gates to generate the entanglement. So if we apply this circuit in our variational quantum eigensolver, and we put several layers, we are able to find the ground state of the system. Now, what about the measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver? So if we have a circuit, I was telling you that there are patterns where you can do single qubit rotation as well as CNOT gates. So essentially, given the circuit, you can just take it and find the equivalent graph state of the circuit, where now there is the additional advantage that all the Clifford part of the circuit is eliminated. But nevertheless, what you do is that you create the custom state, which corresponds to the circuit. And with this custom state, you can reproduce the exact results that the circuit would have given to you, and you can perform exactly the same variational quantum eigensolver. And this is an example of that, where we plot the order parameter of the Schwinger model, which is just a parameter that is used to show, that shows a phase transition. And then we obtain results for different number of layers of the circuit, we use only one, two, three, or four layers. And you can see that the more layers you use, the better the result you get in terms also of convergence, which is what the lower plot is showing to you. So in the lower plot, we just consider the value of the mass of the fermion mass equal to minus 0.7, and then we show the convergence of the algorithm. So this is just for telling you that the algorithm works, and this is not nothing particularly novel because it has been already done. But now what I really care to tell to you is why using a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver can be helpful in this case. So if you remember before, I was telling about the Gottesman-Knill theorem, where you can reduce the complexity of the graph state or remove all the qubits that you do not measure in the rotated basis, because you can efficiently compute their effect beforehand. So in the previous case, where we had the phase gate to Hadamard and C0, we ended up with this three-qubit state, graph state, that does the same thing in a measurement-based fashion. But if we add more Clifford gates, it doesn't matter how many Clifford gates there are, you would get the same state. Now you see that the circles have different lines. This is just because the computation, you need to fix the computation by adding some local Clifford, but adding local Clifford can be done very trivially. You can just, at the moment you need to measure this output, you can just fix, you can just change the rotated basis in which you measure it. So it's very simple to do. And as such, this measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver is particularly helpful if the Clifford component of the circuit for the VQE is big. And then just to tell you something interesting, there was a recent work by Turev et al. Where using a photonic platform, they were able to produce small, customized graph state. So they were considering GH set and cluster state, but essentially this platform is particularly promising because it's quite tunable and is able to create graph state with quite some tunability. So this is particularly promising for this approach, where you remove the Clifford part to get a graph state which has potentially some edge, some nasty edges, but with lot less qubits. Now, what I liked more, what I think it was more interesting, is measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver applied to the perturbed toric code. And why is more interesting? Because there is not the connection between the circuit and the graph state. Because in this case, we are doing something which is hard to be done by using circuits. So let me just explain you very, very briefly what the toric code is. So the toric code is a model that considers a lattice, a two-dimensional lattice with periodic boundary conditions, which corresponds, is equivalent, say, a torus, where each link is a qubit and is stabilized by the operators BP and AS. What does it mean, stabilized? You can think, it means that essentially the toric code is the ground state of the Hamiltonian given by minus the sum of the BP and minus the sum of the AS. What are these BP and AS? Well, the BP is the product of the X operator on the blue links, while the AS is the product of the Z operator on the cross. And then it is well known that since there are two times an X and Y, where an X and an Y are the number of columns and rows in the lattice, there are two an X and Y qubits in the toric code, but there are two less independent stabilizers or generators, AS and BP. This model has four code words which correspond to the four ground state of this Hamiltonian, and we indicate these code words with RS, L, where L stands for logical. So it can be 00, 01, 10, 11. and it's just helpful for the future, just keep in mind. So how do we find this logical state? This logical state can be defined univocally by adding the so-called logical operator to your Hamiltonian, where the logical operator corresponds to a string of X or Z operator along the two main circumferences of the torus. And then you just add them to the Hamiltonian, the sign here, minus one to the R, minus one to the S, depending on the values of R of S, you select the four code words, which are the four ground states of this Hamiltonian. And in the following, we only consider the zero, zero logical state because it is particularly suited to what we are going to do later on. And just ask me, please, if you want to know why is this state particularly suited. But so far it's pretty easy in the sense that there is no rocket science. So this Hamiltonian is well studied, is well known. And these ground state, the code words, are efficiently determined for several qubits. I mean, there are no limitations because this is you can use the stabilizer, the tools for the stabilizer formalism and find this ground state, this graph state for hundreds of qubits, if not thousands. So this is something that is known, well known, and it can be done easily. But now we add a perturbation. And this perturbation is just, it's a meaningful perturbation. Why is meaningful? Well, because we add a local term such that to each qubit, it applies a Z rotation. And this is meaningful because from one side, it can mimic the effect of magnetic field. So let's assume that you want to get this ground state in a lab. How do you know which is the ground state that you have if you have magnetic fields perturbing it? Then it is not true anymore that you can use the stabilizer formalism because this perturbation does not commute with the rest of the Hamiltonian. So this is a relevant question. Which is the ground state in this case? And moreover, in addition to that, you can see that once you add this perturbation to the total Hamiltonian, so to the toric code Hamiltonian, you are actually studying the Z2, a Z2 lattice theory in two dimensions, because here you have a lattice with periodic boundary condition. The BP operators correspond to the magnetic energy, so the electric field circulating in each plaquette or cell, if you want to call it like that. The AS, so the cross operator, correspond to imposing the Gauss law as a penalty in the Hamiltonian. And then the perturbation that we add would correspond for the correct choice of the weights lambda n to the electric energy of the system. So again, finding the ground state of the toric code is easy, but once you add the perturbation, you get a Z2 lattice gauge theory Hamiltonian, and the ground state of this model is not known, and this is hard to get. Now, this was the model, and now we are going to see how to do this measurement-based VQE. And this measurement-based VQE starts from an ansatz state. So if you remember, we start from the ansatz state. So we add auxiliary qubit, we decorate the ansatz state with auxiliary qubit, we measure the auxiliary qubit, and we end up with an output state. The ansatz state is the logical state. Why do we use it as ansatz state? Because it is the natural ground state when the perturbation is off. And then what do we do? Well, this is what is particularly interesting to me because it would be difficult to express with a circuit, and is something quite new, I think. I mean, it's not new for measurement-based quantum computing, but it's new applied here for a variational quantum eigensolver. So what do? We add we add auxiliary qubit on each edge. So these two qubits are this specific qubit and this specific qubit of the ansatz state, and we add these two auxiliary qubit. These two auxiliary qubit will be in an arbitrary state. And why is this important? Well, because if you assume that these two auxiliary qubit are in the plus state, and then later we measure this auxiliary qubit, what will happen in practice is that their measurement will trace them out, and you will end up with the same state, such that in cases of null perturbation, we are ensured that we get the correct result. However, if these qubits are, for instance, in the one state, once we measure them, you can think, because essentially these are CZ operation, so if you apply a CZ operation with a qubit which is on the one state, it does not generate entanglement, and then what you do, you completely eliminate the edge between the two qubits. So essentially you are able to modulate the entanglement, and then in addition to that, if the two auxiliary qubits are not in the plus or one state, you also put some rotations in the qubits of the ansatz state. So you modulate the entanglement and you rotate the state of the ansatz state. So now, adding two auxiliary qubits in a random state is not a protocol which is formally well defined in a measurement-based fashion, because it's not a graph state. This is not a graph state. So how do we solve this problem? The solution is actually very, very simple. At the beginning of this talk, I was telling you how to do a single qubit rotation, and then a single qubit rotation allows you to start from any state and then end up in any state you want. So we add, for each of these qubits in arbitrary state, we add these five qubits, which are measured. And then in particular, the measurement, the qubits where you measure in rotated bases are only two, because you only need to rotate around two axes. Then we can add, we can invoke the Gottesman-Knill theorem, and we end up with a decoration strategy, which is like this. So essentially this corresponds. So if you add these four orange qubits to each of your two connected qubits in the ansatz state, this corresponds to adding two qubits in arbitrary state and then measure them. So now I recall briefly the ansatz state is this graph state here. And then once we decorate it with all the qubits, we get this custom state, which is quite involved. So I'm not expecting people would be able to do it today, but nevertheless, it's something which is promising for the future, and I will tell you soon why. And just for telling you that this approach actually works, in this plot, I present the results of the measurement-based BQE. So what are these lines? The black dotted line and the black dashed line correspond to the state, to the fidelity, and actually no, not the fidelity, the relative energy difference between the real ground state of the theory that we want to get and the zero zero logical state in one case, and the 1-1-1-1-1-1 state in the other one, the latter being the ground state for the perturbation. These two lines have to be compared in particular with the blue line, which is the outcome for the VQS, and then in the case in which all lambda n are equal, and then with the red squares, which correspond to the case in which all of them are equal but are oscillating. So for the orange squares, we have added some noise, some extra noise, in the sense that the lambda n are not equal. And then the green triangles correspond to the case in which we have one qubit, which is highly perturbed, and all the other qubits, which are randomly perturbed with some noise. And as you can see, not only it works better than doing nothing, which is something which should happen, of course, but also is a very stable procedure whenever there is noise affecting the system. If you had the question, okay, this state is too complicated, which is a relevant question, because indeed it's quite complicated to create this graph state. Let me just go through a toy example that can be an initial step towards that result. And this toy example is the toric code with open boundary conditions, also known as planar code, where we only have 4 qubits. And it's stabilized, so the generators are these 4 operators, which is the plaquette operator B1, and then A1, A2, A3 with the Z on the orange links. And then we add a specific perturbation, and this specific perturbation is a perturbation which only acts on the first qubit. So the ground state of the model, the ground state of the toric code, of H0, the ground state of H0 is this graph state, and here I added this little bolt to mimic the perturbation. So we apply a perturbation only there, and then the dashed lines only means that this qubit need to be the basis in which you measure this qubit needs to be rotated by a Hadamard. So it's something which is very very trivial. So do not worry about them. So what do we do? We apply the perturbation on the first qubit, and then this first qubit is only connected to the qubit in the center, if you want. And then we add 2 auxiliary qubits. This corresponds following the same idea as before of adding these 4 auxiliary qubits to be rotated in the rotated basis. And then if we do the measurement base VQE, in this case, what we find is that if we find the ground state with a fidelity which is 1, it's pretty much 1. So essentially here, no matter which is the perturbation, for all values of the perturbation, 0, 10, it can be very strongly perturbed, it can be very weakly perturbed, we find the ground state with perfect fidelity. Because the infidelity here is less than 10 to the minus 15, which is essentially numerical error. So it works very well, and just for a comment, we have seen that even in the toric code, so the previous example, the more complicated example, is if the perturbation is only on 1 or few qubits, we also find perfect fidelity. So now your pain almost came to an end. I'm just giving you some summary. In particular, when should we use the measurement-based VQE? So I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that it's amazing and is always working perfectly. This is not true because standard variational quantum eigensolver have been very, very successful and are very, very powerful in several circumstances. However, there are some circumstances in which measurement base can be a little more powerful. A little better. And these circumstances, at least the ones that we have thought about, is when the ground state of the Hamiltonian that you want to simulate lies in a neighborhood of a graph, such as in the perturbed toric, not choric, but toric code. Because in that case, for the circuit can be very, very challenging to go to this corner of the Hilbert space and can be very costly. So you might need very long, a very long sequence of entangling and possibly Clifford gates to reach that corner. The other situation in which might be very, very promising to use a measurement-based VQE is when you have a large Clifford component. So it is true that current VQE algorithms tend to use as much as possible parametric gates, which are not Clifford. But maybe knowing that if your circuit has a lot of Clifford, you can eliminate them. You can try to think to other designs where the Clifford component is increased. And this would be very helpful for if you want to do a measurement-based variational quantum eigensolver. Secondly, and this is also something important, this allows to run variational algorithms on platforms that so far were a little bit out of the games. And these platforms are mostly photonic platforms that are indeed very promising. So for instance, in this reference, they have created this highly entangled state, and then they know how to create gates. And then using our formalism, you can just use these platforms, and then you can just take a standard VQE and just translate for a measurement-based fraction, and then here you go. And then, as said before, this other work is particularly promising because in the case you want to eliminate all Clifford gates, you're not left with a simple graph state, also known as cluster state, but you are left with a graph state with the connectivity, which can be a little challenging. And following this approach, you are able to create custom states, custom graph state. They are quite tunable. Measurement-based quantum computing has proven to be quite resilient against noise sources. So there are several applications where measurement-based approaches could stand to high errors. So it would be interesting to see and to perform a noise analysis to see how much noise you can have in the system. And finally, and I think that this is the most promising thing to do. So we have introduced this protocol where you decorate the edges, and not only the edges, honestly, it's just adding auxiliary qubit and connecting this auxiliary qubit to a graph state. And we have proposed this way of adding two auxiliary qubit in each edge. And we have shown that this is actually quite helpful in this situation. But this is just at the beginning because it's very hard. It's very hard to exactly express what is happening here in a circuit-based way. Also because in this case you're putting auxiliary qubit on two connected white qubit, if you want. But in principle, you can put auxiliary qubits connected to several others. And this would be many, many qubit gate that you get only by measuring a single auxiliary qubit. So the effect of measuring a single auxiliary qubit could impact the whole of your state in a way that is very hard, or it's challenging, at least for me, to understand exactly. So investigating this effect these effects where you decorate your state in different ways would have a lot of potential in reducing the number of required auxiliary qubit, which also means to have less variational parameters and to have the MBVQE more efficient. And I said, so this is just a thank to all the people that contributed to this work. And I thank you for the attention and for the patience so far.
Thank you very much, Luca, for this really nice talk. Are there any questions? If you have any question, just raise your hand or unmute yourself. Okay, if there are no questions, maybe I can start. Like, I was wondering if you do this measurement-based VQE scheme, is it possible to incorporate like symmetries? Because let's say, okay, you show the Schwinger model and you have used a formulation which is directly on the gauge invariant subspace, but you might not always be able to do that. And in a gate-based VQE, you could just make sure that your local pieces, your resource Hamiltonians kind of respect the symmetry of the model, or let's say the gauge symmetry. And that's to a certain extent straightforward to think about building a circuit that respects these type of symmetries. Is this also possible in such a setup?
Yeah, definitely. So first, if you can implement a symmetry in the circuit-based way, you can also do here because you can translate the circuit into a graph state. So if the circuit respects this symmetry, your graph state, or actually measuring the auxiliary qubit in your graph state, the effect of that will also respect these symmetries. As an example, assume that that you have only a few qubits, and then you are, I don't know, in a zero magnetization subspace, and then as such you do not want to apply X gates on the qubits. Yeah, then you can just rotation around the X axis around your qubits, because it would bring you out of this magnetization zero magnetization subspace. Then you can just use the corresponding the pattern for rotations, and then set the angles around the X axis being equal to zero. And then the same, there are a lot of gates in the zoo of measurement-based quantum computing. And these gates, one example is that with a few auxiliary qubits, you can make a parametric ZZ gate between two qubits, or a XX gate. So you know what you are doing, and mm-hmm. and similarly to the circuit case, where you know what your gates are doing and you know how to preserve symmetries, you can do also for the okay. measurement based case. Of course, here when we were just adding this auxiliary qubit to each edge, this one is a little harder to understand what is happening, and so you would need to study what the tools that you are using are doing to the state. In principle, the idea of measurement-based quantum computing is that once you find a strategy, once you find a pattern, in this case, these two auxiliary qubits in between, and then you see what it's doing, then you know this pattern, and then you repeat this pattern. So the idea at the end is to find new patterns which are easy to do in a measurement-based fashion, but hard or challenging to do in a circuit. And then once you study this pattern, you can customize them as you do for a circuit to respect certain symmetries at least.